you for joining us on the YSF podcast, the podcast brought to you by Yorkshire Sport Foundation. Now, this podcast is all about sharing learning and best practice from the sport and physical activity sector here in Yorkshire. And today we are joined by Rashida Salu, the founder of Ready Steady Active, a community organisation based in Kirklees in West Yorkshire. Now, Ready Steady Active provide community-based sports, health and physical activity opportunities for women and girls with a focus on increasing participation and health amongst girls of a South Asian and Muslim background. Every week, Ready Steady Active works with more than 200 people of all ages, attending exercise, health and multi-sport sessions, including sports such as football, basketball and rounders. And it is a rounders project that began as a summer holiday activity that is the focus of the episode. With Sophia Magda, one of the participants, joining us to share her story and where turning up for a rounders session has led in her life. Both Rashida and Sophia share their professional and personal lived experiences of sport and physical activity as we look at some of the more prominent barriers to women and girls from diverse ethnic backgrounds in being active. To begin with, Rashida told us a little bit more about how Ready Steady Active came to be and how she made her personal passion her profession. I hope you enjoy.
So we've been going for a number of years, probably just under 10 years. And sometimes when I think about it, I'm not quite sure when it started. But yeah, so probably got going for about maybe possibly around 8 years, I would say. But it's got a strong focus on working with women and girls, kind of tackling inactivity and trying to get more women and girls into playing sports, becoming more physically active, with a strong focus, but not exclusively, on those from the ethnically diverse communities, so particularly South Asian women and girls, and those from the Muslim background as well. And like I just mentioned, I think it's very much kind of like around tackling inactivity or reducing those barriers for those communities that struggle to kind of get out playing sports. We work with kind of improving your physical health, obviously, because you're getting active on the pitches and things, but also about kind of improving mental health as well. And also a big focus over the last few years has been about bringing people together. But I generally see Ready Steady Active to be a catalyst, I suppose, in terms of supporting people that historically or don't have the opportunities to get active, to get them onto that first ladder of getting into the sessions, thinking about physical activity, going walking, and then supporting them with that journey of developing themselves. And they can stay within Ready Steady Active. We develop with the people that come to our sessions, but also support them to go elsewhere to kind of access the mainstream provision and that kind of stuff as well. And I suppose the reason why we work with women and girls from the South Asian background is it's a demographic that has probably got the lowest participation rate because of some of those barriers that we face. And some of them, I think, are probably external because the opportunities are not there, or the opportunities that are there don't necessarily think about them. They don't think about the barriers that they face. But there's quite a lot of barriers that are internal as well. So some of it's around kind of confidence. Some of it's just kind of giving people that awareness that they can go and they can do stuff as well. So we operate in a wide range of different areas, but very much in West Yorkshire. So I've done work in Bradford and Leeds, but the main focus is more localised within North Kirklees. So mainly the towns of Batley and Dewsbury, areas where there's a big ethnically diverse community, but also probably loads of low socioeconomic groups as well. So where we recognise that there's probably a lot of health inequalities, but particularly when you're working with South Asian community, there's a high prevalence of cardiovascular disease and kind of those kind of health issues as well. So it's kind of really bringing to the forefront that we've got this really great mechanism of physical activity or sport, which you can really utilise to improve your health, mental health, physical health as well. So that's in a nutshell, that's basically what Ready Steady Active is.
Where did your passion for wanting to get involved in this come from? Was it through your own experiences of sport and activity, or perhaps lack of opportunities?
Yeah, so very much with what you've touched on, it came from the barriers and challenges that I faced growing up in terms of being able to access sports. So growing up, PE was my favourite subject. It's something that seemed to come a little bit easier to me than possibly other areas. So I was always wanting to be a rounders, tennis, wanting to join the clubs and that kind of thing. But because of the background that I was from, South Asian, Muslim, and I think it was just not something that you saw other girls my age and from the same background kind of playing sports as well. So I suppose there was a lot of barriers from the community that this isn't the right thing for you to do, and also from the family as well, like this isn't what Asian girls do. So I suppose that's probably where you could probably say that the fight or the match was lighted, really. So kind of really struggled through my teenage years as I grew older. And then, I mean, I went into a career into science. I spent 10 years as an industrial chemist. I'm quite happy with the science life, but there's always something at the back of my mind. So I'd like to do something for young girls like myself in my local area to try to get them to have some opportunity to kind of get active. And as I was working as a scientist, I kind of thought, let me just set up one session and try and see if this would work with no ambition whatsoever to try and make it into anything big. And then when I started up the session, there was still a little bit of a pushback from the community, with certain leaders in the community thinking, hang on, this isn't the right thing for our girls. But I mean, I remember like early days sitting in a hall, putting out flyers in the shops and twiddling your thumbs because nobody would come to your session. And then if you kind of go forward 7-8 years, like I've literally got quite a big network of people and there's a huge demand. And I think that's what it is, really. I think, I suppose in my mind, and I probably quite naively, I can't understand how somebody could not like sport. That whole thought of not liking sport I just can't understand it. So for me, I just feel like it's not necessarily people don't like sport. It needs to be sold to them or put to them in a way that would work for them. And because sport, I think, is quite an easy sell, but it's just for us as a provider, it's very much about making it right for the person that's standing in front of you as well. But it did very much come from the challenges that I faced. And as I kind of work with more and more people, and I'm going to be speaking to Sophia as well, it's kind of seeing that journey. And I think that the high that you get from seeing somebody come to your session inactive, quite nervous, shy, to then go on to enjoying sport, becoming aware of the benefits, and then even going even further to become an ambassador for supporting others. It's just fantastic to see.
And taking that idea of finding something that people enjoy and want to be part of, I imagine, came into Rounders. So we're going to go and talk about where the team and the club and the session has gone to, but just take us back to that initial idea, because it started just a sort of summer activity, didn't it? So why Rounders? How did it first get off the ground?
Yeah, so when City Active first happened, and this is me coming in with not a lot of knowledge, not really understanding the sector, and I don't come from a sport development background, don't have a degree in the subject. I come from a science background, which sometimes I think probably did help me in some regard as well. So I didn't look at the textbooks. I just literally did whatever I thought could work. And sometimes that is required, because textbooks might tell you to go one way, whereas things might work. So quite early on, when Rented Active was established, early days, it was just literally putting multi-sports out for women and girls. So it was like we'd have sessions where one week it might be basketball, the other week might be football, cricket, and then just speaking to the ladies if they want or what worked for them. And for some reason, Rounders just seemed to be that sport that worked really well. And I think part of it probably related to the fact that many people had reasonably positive experiences at school. Rounders plays a big part in the PE curriculum. And I think that's probably another reason why you should always stay there, because a lot of people that are coming through the kind of the sessions now are coming because they've seen Rounders at PE and they've experienced it. So I would say if you go back to 2013, 2014, I was delivering a range of multi-sport sessions, but one of the ones that really worked was Rounders. And I think probably Rounders is one of those sports that has that capability of being quite flexible. You can take it to the Rounders England rules, or you can keep it as basic and simple as possible. But the wins from Rounders, where you come in, you can't hit a ball, to hitting a ball, are quite easy and noticeable to see. So as soon as somebody comes in, they haven't got the coordination, but then you as a provider start bowling that ball nice and slow, possibly even using their bat as a target to kind of help them get on that journey. You get those smiles coming in straight away. And I think Rounders is one of those spots that can really kind of help that kind of journey to kind of getting active. So 2013, 2014, multi-sports, but hang on, Rounders seems to be working really well. And then 2015, let me just take this a little bit further. So it started off as a summer program over the 6 weeks holidays. Initially, I thought, let me try and go into four different areas, start up some kind of sessions over 5 weeks, with a view of bringing people who attend these four sessions together for a festival. And it's the first time they kind of got into a competition. We had some kind of T-shirts printed and everything, so they all felt like they were part of the team as well. They came in and we did think that it's going to be reasonably friendly, the way that the sessions were kind of pitched, it was quite casual. But when they came in, and Sophia, I can hear Sophia just kind of smiling and laughing in the background. Yes, it was friendly, but it was massively competitive. And I think after the session, after the festival, I mean, it was like a full afternoon. I had a number of texts in my phone the other day saying, my legs are hurting. I'm going through all this pain, but I absolutely loved the festival. I absolutely loved the competition. And I think that's basically when I thought, hang on, we probably have something here which could lead to a competition, a competitive side to it, but also keeping that friendly nature as well. So I'd probably say the first my rounders came on was because it worked. But that summer program was probably that little trial, that pilot that really got things going. And the festival was the icing on the cake that basically said, hang on, competition works. But going from the competition to 2 years, or to a, 1 or 2 years later to the league was, it was tough because we're now going from a one-off event to commitment. And I think this is going to be a bit of a pilot. It's going to be a bit of a trial. But then obviously, once we started it, it worked really well. But in 2017 was when basically the league got set up. And basically what happened was we got the women from Batley and Dewsbury. Some of the ones that came in 2016 are still within the league. So that's really good to see that they're still out there, they're still playing. But 2017 got everybody together. And I think as a provider, this is probably one of the key things. You need to really understand the people that come through the door, but also understand the dynamics within the group. So the idea was I had 20 to 30 people here, how can I split them up into different groups and kind of help them become teams. So Sophia was one of the sort of people that I'd attended, and she came with kids. So it made sense, hang on, Sophia and her kids, we could put them together and this is a group, and then kind of task them to come up with their own team name. And I think it was Sophia's daughter that came with Batley Ninjas, and then Batley Ninjas will form. We had a bunch of women from Dewsbury, and there were some friendships that were developing as a result of the sessions to kind of put together to become Batgirls. And then we had another bunch of women that were from lots of different places, and we kind of became Iron Maidens, I think it was. So we had three teams, and then we'd had another team coming as well into the league, which was more in common, which I'll mention a little bit more later on. So that's basically 2017, league launch, four teams set up. And that's basically the starting point, and that's where Sophia kind of probably really got into rounders and started her journey as well.
Sophia, how did you come to first get involved in these sessions? How did you first find out about it, I guess, and that kind of thing? And what were your early memories of going to play?
So my girls, I've got five children, but mostly my girls, because my son was one of those that did his own thing. But my girls attended Rashida's Ready Steady Active sessions. My youngest is 17. I think she was probably 4, maybe 5 when we first started going. So they've developed quite a relationship with Rashida off the pitch as well. We used to go, and the reason why I was so adamant that all of us would attend is because I actually home educated my children, and I still wanted them to get out, to get the social life, to get the sport. And Rashida provided that in a very safe environment, and any concerns I had as a parent, she addressed and made life so much easier for us to try. And I've never been... I love sports, but I've never been an elite player, if that makes sense. I've always been one of those that likes to get joining, but I've never been good or brilliant, as I put it. So Rashida kind of took that fear away for me with Ready, Steady, Active, and then also seeing the girls really enjoy themselves. I've always been very active with my kids in that sense. So moving on, when Rashida set up the league and said, right, here's your team, it was like, what? You know, I'm not joking. It was really sort of like shocking, to say the least. So we took away this team, and she says, "Right, this is your team. You're going to play in the league with it." And we thought, "Oh, okay then." So she taught us all the basics. All we had to do was go away and train. We did horrendous that year. I think we were bottom of the league. We also lost two players to pregnancies. So there started the. What's the word I'm looking for? We were looking for players, so the recruitment drive, shall I say. That's when it started. That's when I would say a little fire was lit for me to start recruiting and getting other women involved, like myself. And our motto was, you don't have to be good, just come hit a ball and you'll see how much fun it is. You know, that's how we started. We started slowly, slowly recruiting. I'm going to say slow because it took us a long time to get where we are now. We lost many players due to either getting married or having kids. And the younger players, the parents would turn around and say, well, no, exams are more important than sports. They can't attend anymore. We dealt with a lot of that. So then we decided, you know what, we need to show people what we're at, what we're doing, and we moved on to social media. And so between me and my girls, we covered Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. I took a lot of advice from them. So the girls tend to run Instagram because they're more up to date on that, and I tend to run the Facebook and the Twitter. And we took to social media to advertise that, you know, anybody can play. It's fun. It's not always about winning. It's about improving yourself. And that brings me to today, where we now have 20 plus members on the team. So we've now got two teams running, Team A and Team B under the Ninja name. We have got our girls session for 9 plus up until before they join us in the adult team. We have 30 plus girls in that. We have recently just had a tournament for girls, which was extremely successful. We recruited girls from other teams in the West Yorkshire League, and we had 50 plus children turn up, which is now, I've recently also been contacted by Rounders England to start considering a junior pilot league, sort of like a pilot junior league in West Yorkshire for young girls. So there's lots of exciting things on the horizon, and all coming from Ready Steady Active. She just made it possible for us.
It's an all coming there. If you take out the last 2 years for obvious reasons, it's a lot's happened in quite a short space of time.
Absolutely.
Looking at yourself specifically, Sophia, there, you touched on, you know, like you said, you're a mother of five, I believe. You're a business owner. You were homeschooling the children as well, which people probably would have thought was hard before the last 2 years, and then people have had to had experience of it know just how hard it is. Yeah. Where did being physically active fit into your life with everything that was going on before Rounders came along?
Moving back in that time, one of the reasons I got active with the children is because I was my daughter, who was 9 at the time, she's now 24, but she was 9 at the time, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. 6 months later, so was I. And I was also diagnosed with underactive thyroid. So I felt that one good way to help my health was to get active. I was very, very overweight as well. So I thought this might help health-wise, you know. So we started off like that. How it's impacted me has been nothing short of amazing in my own eyes, in the sense of I love fitness now, regularly exercise. My children also taken on that aspect of fitness as well. But it's also pushed them into careers, as my youngest is now a level 3 multi-sport coach who can work with special needs children. Myself, I'm a level 1 coach. Moving on, I'm doing the level 2 coach for Rounders, only delayed because of COVID. Otherwise, we would have done this a lot earlier. I would never have guessed that I would be where I am right now, if that makes sense. I also sit on the West Yorkshire Rounders League committee. Again, something I never thought possible. And this coming from someone who wasn't always the greatest in sport. So it's had a massive impact on my life in just a short amount of time.
We know from, even just look at any of the Sport England Active Lives data, that South Asian women are the least likely to be active. And we do these podcasts to try and help people who are perhaps trying to engage different communities in being active and tackle those inequalities.
Yes.
When you look at the insight from this girl, Can, you look at those stats, you talk about the barriers, and I don't imagine they change too drastically between whatever your ethnic background is as a woman. But from both your sort of lived experience, are there any of those barriers to women becoming active that are more prominent that people might want to be keep in mind if they are trying to engage a community of predominantly South Asian women, as an example?
Yeah, in the beginning, it was more about families trusting who their girls were with, the younger generation, that is. Women trusting who they were going with. So there was the trust, the confidence, most of what Rashida's mentioned. But I also feel that within the community, they make the boundary, they make the barriers themselves. So, for example, as Rashida's mentioned, confidence. And so without realising it, they've already put one barrier down. And I think that comes from, it stems from how our families are, for it, will say that education is more important. So they don't see that a sport is something that's necessary or worth it or, you know, so when they do start to get involved, and this has changed a lot over, I think, the last few years, I've noticed a massive, massive change within our community with regards to exercise and how it helps our health, both mentally and physically, especially with the rise of illnesses such as diabetes and so on. But other barriers which I've noticed, and again, I don't know whether they're barriers or just lack of communication. For example, one big example I could give is I'm sitting on the West Yorkshire committee, and obviously they are 90% English. I am the small percentage that's not. I'm a Muslim, so I have barriers. For example, if we have a presentation evening, there's the involvement of alcohol and blah, blah, blah. And at first, when I first joined, I wouldn't speak out. I wouldn't say that what the Muslim community needed. The most I would say is, well, you can't have a match on that day because it's Eid. And then as I built a very close friendship with the people on the community, and we're very open and very informal, and I've started to learn that, you know, part of it was my own fault. I needed to speak out about certain subjects because they didn't understand. And when I started to bring it up, and I, at first I used to feel really, you know, worried or anxious as how they were going to take it. Would they be okay? And I'm going to put this in because I grew up in a very... racial community, sort of like racist community, shall I say. It wasn't outwardly racist, but you just didn't say anything. So move fast forward, we're away from that, well away from that now. But, you know, as you grow up, for myself anyway, I wasn't quite sure how to cope or how to deal with this. But now I've realized, you know, how the friendship has developed within us, and that that's one of the reasons they wanted me there was to speak my mind and to tell them what they did and didn't need to do. Hopefully this will now open doors for a lot more Asian teams, not just Muslim. We've got a part Sikh team coming from Bradford as well. And this is all because communication needs to be opened. And I think that barrier was, for me, one of the biggest ones that I overcame personally.
Yeah, so I just listened to Sophia. I think that she makes some fantastic points there. Representation is a big thing. And I think, like, seeing yourself, Sophia, going from obviously kind of getting into sport to building your confidence to going onto the committee for West Yorkshire, that is a big thing. Because just like you say, I think to be able to see people in those positions where they can influence. And I think you shouldn't feel too bad with the fact that you couldn't initially say what you needed to say, because initially it does take that time to kind of understand the dynamics of the group and kind of really feel like you fit in. But a couple of points, because Andy, you were asking the question around the barriers. I would say probably some of the most prominent barriers that we face in the South Asian community is the space needs to be right. So you need to have that privacy. When you're working with women and girls, you need to have that segregation because they don't want to be within that space where there's men around and all that kind of stuff as well. Having that, and Sophia mentioned that ultimately, whenever you're setting up anything, it is about people. So you need to have somebody that you respect. You need to have somebody that you trust, and parents need to have somebody that they trust. But when you're running that session, you also need to make sure that you can make that session work with the participants and get on well with each other as well. And then there's also my generation and Sophia's generation. We come from, our parents' generations have not necessarily valued sport or have played sport themselves. Or we haven't seen our mums and our aunties kind of put in a lot of value to physical activity. So if you've come from that thinking, it's not something that you're going to put a lot of value to. And if you've never had that option to play sport, then you don't know what the benefits are. So you're missing out on that whole kind of big range of benefits you get from sport. So until you actually go out there and try it, you're not going to know. But my general thinking is, regardless of what background, whether you're from Muslim faith or another faith, we ultimately sit on a spectrum. And it's just, but as a provider, I just need to make sure that when people come to my sessions, I'm speaking to them. And just you either need to dial it up or dial it down. So you increase the privacy aspect or ability to wear whatever clothing you feel comfortable, just as long as it's safe, to that session. But when I mentioned previously about the internal barriers, confidence is a big thing, and a support network around you. If you're going out wanting to play sports, but people are laughing at you or saying, why are you doing that? You're not going to go out because you don't have that support network. So it's kind of not necessarily just bringing women and girls from this community to start thinking about sport. It's about bringing the whole family to kind of value sport as well.
Can I join in on this as well? One thing I have realised is that the women that stay with us are when they have supportive husbands who want them to play. So there's a little bit of a male barrier as well in some families within the Asian community, unfortunately. Men and sometimes the older generation don't respect sport as something, as I mentioned before, worthwhile. What I am finding now, especially within the kids team that we have, the children's team, is that a lot of dads are super supportive now. The whole generation is slowly changing, and it's so fantastic to see, but it has taken a while.
How do you, mentioned Sophia, Rashida, about bringing families together, and Sophia started that her sort of involvement began from her children being involved in your sessions. Aside from that, as a way in, and I imagine there'll be people who may have joined through that route, but perhaps because of the lack of support at home or in the wider community, have perhaps then dropped out. What are some of the things you do to try and create that support network? I know it's a big thing to provide, and it might not be as simple as, I don't know, setting up a WhatsApp group, but how do you try and overcome in that barrier, I guess, in particular?
Yeah, so I think, in terms of, deliver quite a lot of provision for young people, but I think having a strong relationship with parents, when they come in, it's not just sign this form and go. It's about understanding the parents and where the children are coming from as well. So in terms of the participants that come to my women and girls, the women's sessions, I get a lot of mums that come in initially because they've dropped off the kids at one of my other sessions, and because they form that relationship with myself, they then move on. It's kind of making people aware that you're always there. You're somebody who's going to support them. You're somebody that can be trusted. And it's kind of supporting them in the way that the sessions are run in local spaces. They're run in familiar spaces. So for example, one of the facilities that I use is the L. Hickman Centre in Batley. Now, that's a big community centre that holds a whole range of family events. So many people from the community will have been there for a wedding or for other social events. If they already know that space, it kind of helps that journey along as well. So instead of putting a session where it's 30 minutes in the car, you kind of put a session where everybody's been to before, and it's quite local as well. But I think, and I always think, when it comes to grassroots sport for development work, the 10 minutes before the session when you're setting up and people are walking in, and the 10 minutes after the session when you're packing up, are probably the most critical, because that's when you talk to people, you listen to them. And you'd be surprised at the number of people that stay back to talk to you and tell you, and you find out a lot about people's lives, which I'd imagine they're probably not telling other people, but you as a coach have this huge amount of information about people, and that kind of helps you to adapt sessions as well.
So I agree with what Rashida's saying there, because I don't think I realised quite what she's saying until we started teaching the children's sessions. And just listening to the parents' concern, like one parent came in and said, look, my daughter's, you know, going off the rails a bit. Would you mind keeping her in this group with these girls? She's made friends and it's having a positive impact on her behaviour, etc. Just small little things like that. If you take note and you put it into practice, it's amazing how it creates really good bonds among the children and the parents as well. Like Rashida says, again with the parents, we had the tournament on Saturday. The parents are now on at me that can we get the parents together to have a meal and just get to know each other. So it's really good to meet other parents with children in the team. All these little things contribute and spread the word wider as well. That's how we get more team members. That's how we get more children, is through that method. Is creating a really strong environment for the children and trust. Like Rashida said again, I trusted Rashida with my children. I went and because I saw how they were enjoying it, I enjoyed it. And if we, I have literally carried on Rashida's principles into what we do, and it really does work.
You mentioned over the last 2 or 3 years, Sophia, that you seem to have noticed a quite a significant change, or in, whether it be an attitude to sport.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you pinpoint a tipping point, or is it just what you kind of alluded to there, that it is building trust and you can't put a time on that?
On a whole, the NHS has been kickstarting, you know, healthy eating, health, you know, looking after yourself. So people are looking for ways to get fit easily. So I think that's part of it. And I think also, because we've been around now for so long and people have seen us around, people have seen the positive impact, I think that is also part of the drive to why it's becoming better, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not very good at explaining, I do apologise. So I went to drop my grandson off at Kicks, which is a local young children's football club. My grandson is only 4. He's been going there for the year now. And someone's approached us saying, oh, you know what, I've seen you on Twitter, I've seen you on Facebook, I really want to bring my daughter, you know. And this was a dad. This wasn't a mum, this was a dad. So for me, that was like, wow. You know, he approached me, he wants his daughter to go. Fantastic. And we're seeing more and more of that. So that's what I mean in the general change of, you know, they're more open to the idea, they trust us, which is brilliant.
News, events and jobs for those making sport happen in South Yorkshire and West Yorkshire. Get the latest local, regional and national updates direct to your inbox. Sign up to the YSF Weekly at yorkshiresport.org/subscribe.
In the next part of this episode, we'll look at the role that sport can play in helping to bring a community together. In 2015, Jo Cox was elected as the MP for Batley and Spen. In her maiden speech in Parliament, she said, "What surprises me time and time again as I travel around the constituency is that we are far more united and have far more in common than that which divides us." Less than a year later, she was tragically murdered. Rashida begins the next part of this episode discussing how a more in common team joining the Rounders League changed her perspective on the role sport plays in a community.
And I think I probably just touch on it a little bit as well, but when the league first started, and I said there was 4 teams that came in, one of the external teams that came was More in Common. And that was just after the tragedy that we had in Batley with Jo Cox's murder as well. And I think that's, for me, that was a bit of a turning point, because when I first came into this work, starting at my first session, kind of putting my flyers out and everything, sport was just about sport. Sport was just about, I love sport. I love kicking a ball. Why does somebody else not love kicking a ball? Let's just get everybody to kick a ball. That's basically what it is. But as I've gone through the process of delivering sessions and seeing people change, you recognise that sport has such a big part to play in our society and in the community. And then when Jo Cox's murder happened and More in Common came into the league, I think I probably picked up a lot from the conversations that were happening around Batley and from the values that More in Common, the team, brought in. And they had some fantastic individuals, Kim Ledby to the MP for Batley and Spen, joined the team as well. And I think that was all about showing how people of all backgrounds can come together through sport. So over the years, eventually actually the focus has always been South Asian women and girls, because they need that intervention. But we can only really get on well with each other if we have mechanisms in our kind of day-to-day life where we can come together, we have those conversations. And now, when it's actually year 5 and year 6, we had teams from all backgrounds. And like Sophia was mentioning, like the relationship she has with the committee members and with other teams, ultimately, I think we always have this apprehension about having conversations with those that are not the same as you. It could be different kind of backgrounds, classes, you know, all that kind of stuff, different languages. But ultimately, if you put a bat and ball on a field, and you've got 2 people coming together, the conversations, the bat and the ball is the conversation starter. And then it just goes from there. So it's really important how we can not just improve physical and mental health through sport, but how can we then use sport to kind of bring people together? And I think that's something that sport providers need to recognise, that let's not just think about the sport. Let's not just think about the numbers of people coming through. Let's see what the bigger impact and the broader picture as well.
Sophia, what's your perspective on that? We've spoken to you, or you've spoken about how sport and activity was a means or a way of improving your physical health with your diabetes. You wanted to get your children involved through, as Rashida mentioned there, the murder of Joe Cox in 2016. Do you now see sport as something bigger than just being active? And if so, how have you seen it play a role within the community in the time that you've been involved?
When Joe Cox's murder happened, obviously there was a lot of apprehension in the community and so on and so forth. And I think, to be honest, I think that was one of the reasons why I was a little bit scared to play in the Rounders England tournament. How would I be accepted? How would it be? What would they think? And to be fair, every match I've ever played in, every tournament I've ever taken place in, I've experienced nothing, nothing untoward. In fact, like I've said to you, we've developed really good friendships, close relationships with different teams, an open relationship where we can be honest with each other, we take the mick out of each other. Sport is the one way that you can come together and have an indirect conversation. You can have that unity. With regards to diabetes, etc., I can say that my health is actually the best it's ever been. At my age and with type 1 diabetes, there's often a lot of complications. I don't have any of those, which I'm very lucky. And all down to the fact that I was introduced to something I really enjoy. It's pushed me to do other things. I've done boxing. I do weightlifting. I may not be the slimmest, but I actually enjoy all sorts of sports now because of that. Moving forward, I think this is what needs to be tackled, is just to get more people in dialogue and more people playing against each other. I do hope with our kids' junior league, if we manage to get it off the ground, I think that will be a fantastic way to encourage that, start now and bring up the next generation to not even be worried about these sort of things. It shouldn't be an issue in this day and age.
What are you most proud of, particularly linked to the Rounders over the last sort of 5 or 6 years? What do you reflect on with the most pride? That might be an individual story or perhaps just the role it's played in the community.
For me, it's just seeing people improve. First of all, seeing how many women join us, even if they leave afterwards. But for me, my proudest moment is always what I call the light bulb moment amongst my players, is when they suddenly figure, oh, this is how you do it. And they do it and they become excellent players. If only I could record how they were before and what they are now, that to me is the biggest achievement. As a teacher, as I put it, you see, it's like when you're teaching somebody and they get it, it's just such a proud moment. That for me is the biggest bit. That's what I do it for. That's what I get the kick out of.
Sophia, finally, then you mentioned then you can't record how it changes other people necessarily.
Yeah.
But looking at yourself, you mentioned health and all those things, but how do you compare the Sophia as a person to when before Rounders and before Rounders came into your life, and the Sophia who's sat here today looking back on everything that's happened over the last 5 or 6 years?
You won't recognise me. A lot more confident. I know what I want. I know what I want to achieve. I've got dreams which I never thought I would have. Just generally from a stay-at-home mum, I've gone on now to like own my own business, which might not necessarily be related, but it is a big part and parcel of getting involved, because it pushed me to get involved with people, if that makes sense. From a literal stay-at-home mum with five kids, I'm now a coach, sitting on the committee, run my own business. Even sometimes I sit back and think, wow, you know, so I would have been unrecognisable. And I once had a friend come up to me and said, I always knew you could do much more and you've just made me so proud. And this was just a really like, what? You know, I wasn't expecting that from somebody. It's a very simplistic way of looking at it. But for me, that's what I see.
No, it's wonderful. And Rashida, your heart must, I don't know, Sophia's done quite a few things like that. Every time you hear that, must make your heart burst to have played a role in that. So, but what else are you, I guess a two-part question, I say aside from perhaps Sophia, what are you most proud of over the last 5 or 6 years? And what would you say is your biggest learning from that time and from this sort of project, if you like, that you would want to share with others perhaps in a similar position to you?
I'm just so proud of Sophia. Absolutely well done. I mean, I can see from the day that she first came through the door to now, her confidence is just very high. She's able to just roll with things, like things might come her way, and instead of being kind of going into the background, she's in the front and she's proactively moving things across. And I think we need more people like Sophia to be out there delivering that provision, being the faces of the clubs, because I think, just like I said before, it's the people that make things work, and Sophia is just that right person that can, I think she attracts people to her. So it's, well done, Sophia. I think I'm just really proud of your journey. Yeah, so I think, I mean, you can't not listen to Sophia and not be proud, because obviously, like, the impact Zounders and kind of that journey has made to herself and to her family as well. But ultimately, I think it's not necessarily that I can see people, through the work that I've done, see people out there playing rounders. I don't think that's the bit that gives me the pride. It's the changes that I've seen in their confidence, their personalities, the network that they've built. And I know we've spoken previously where when the teams have formed, they've had a great support network. And I know Batley Ninjas have gone through, some of their individual players have gone through certain trauma as well. So having that whole network of people around yourself as well. And I think it's that kind of thing that the work that I've done, it gives me pride that we have got people that have come together through sport, but also seeing the younger generation think that, you know what, sport is for them in terms of not just participating, but becoming, thinking of it as a career as well. So we've got a number of people who come to me and kind of ask me questions on how do you go into coaching, how do you go into various different things as well. So it's great to see that we're getting people thinking about sport as a career as well. But I can give you an example from a number of years ago. It was actually when we went to the Leeds Rounders Cup, when I selected like a bunch of women from the different teams, and an individual who came to that tournament. And a captain's job is not easy. I think it's easier being me in provision than it is to kind of be a captain, because ultimately you want everybody to have a game, everybody to have a positive experience, but you want to come back and have won that match. And it's not always easy to put the right team out without somebody feeling like they were not necessarily not chosen. So when we went for that match, we had more people than we obviously needed, because you have to have your subs. And there was one individual who loved the matches, who loved the competitions. Like, the first time that she'd actually experienced kind of going out there and playing matches. But when she didn't get selected for some of the matches, because we just had to do it that way to make sure everybody got some playing opportunity, you could see the frustrations build up, as you could see that she wasn't entirely happy. But I remember once the competition had finished, I approached her and I said, you know what, let's go out for a coffee, let's meet up and let's have a chat. And I think that was really interesting for me, because the reason why the frustrations built up was because she'd come from a background, somebody who was in her 50s, come from a background where she was never allowed to play sport. Huge amount of pressure from the family saying, this isn't for you. You're a girl, you're somebody of the Muslim faith. You're not supposed to be playing sports. And she had years of being stopped from playing sports to then be able to first experience on the field playing a competitive match. And I think you could tell why the frustrations had come out was because first opportunity, but she didn't get to play as much as she hoped to. And I think that was quite a good realization for me, that whenever we run sessions, we've got lots of people coming there with lots of different stories, and we don't know what those stories are. Some of them are related to barriers to sport, but some of them are related to issues at home, mental health. And ultimately, I think when you're there as a coach or a sports provider, your job is to kind of welcome them in with open arms and try and understand that you don't know what life they're coming from. But you just have to make sure that you give everybody a positive experience. And I think it's that part of it where what gives me the most pride is people are happy to speak to me about their issues, but it's knowing that that particular activity on that day has changed some element of their life for the positive. And I think it's probably that kind of element that keeps you going day to day, because I do a whole range of other bits of work as well. but I don't think I can ever see myself stopping going out there putting cones out on a Sunday morning, because I think there's something special about that kind of work and that connection with people.
My thanks to both Rashida and Sophia for their time in recording this episode. And if you enjoyed it, if you took plenty from it, then please do subscribe or follow wherever you're listening to us, wherever you get your podcasts, and share it with colleagues so that they can learn from Rashida and Sophia and what they've had to say. Now, we're always looking for new topics, new organisations to feature on the YSF podcast, to share that learning, to share that best practice with others. If you think that's you, your project, your organisation have got a story to tell, then please do get in touch. You can tweet us at Yorkshire Sport. You can find us on LinkedIn, or you can email me. I'm the media manager. My name is Andy Morgan, and my email address is andy.morgan@yorkshiresport.org. And we'd love to share some more of your stories and have some more of these podcast episodes going out. So please feel free to get in touch. But until then, we'll look forward to seeing you again on the YSF podcast.